New Perspectives Open Pitch presents Memoirs of a Little 'Un, a 10-part collection of heartwarming stories and reminiscences of growing up in rural England during the 60s by Chrissy Payne. Part 10. Uncle Nobby.
Despite all the changes in society, shops open all day and every day, and the possibility of a pint of beer for breakfast, if that's what takes your fancy, Sunday, for me, still retains a hint of past times. Traditions hang by a thread, and with each passing year the thread becomes increasingly worn, until one day it snaps completely, and the aroma of roast beef and Yorkshire pudding filling the neighbourhood will be consigned to the history books. One languid Sunday afternoon in June, I was reminded of the old days. All seemed quiet outdoors, save the occasional solitary dog barking and the gentle repetitive cooing of a ring-collared dove. A warm breeze, hardly anything at all, rustles the trees and carries with it gentle fragrant bursts of honeysuckle and old roses. Yes, it was most definitely an Uncle Nobby sort of day. Coming from such a large family, we boasted a great many aunts and uncles. Some we saw on a regular basis, and others not at all. They were talked about in hushed tones. One of these uncles had won the war single-handedly. Another was an authority on fungi. But by far the most entertaining in this vast collection was Uncle Nobby, and generally for all the wrong reasons. Born in 1904, he was too young to fight in the Great War, and his poor eyesight and age got him a reprieve from the Second. I looked to see if there was a term to describe this period, like baby boomers for the period after the Second World War, but I can't find one for Nobby, so I'll stick with jammy beggar. Uncle Nobby never worked, and Mother described him as a gentleman of independent means. He lived a charmed existence with his wife, my Aunt Doris, who waited on him hand and foot. He had three pleasures in life: Ruddle's beer, home cooking, and his beloved cricket. I never once heard him discuss politics or religion. In fact, whatever the conversation, he always had the knack of turning the subject to cricket. He was a portly figure, usually decked out in three types of tweed, and his passion for the game didn't go beyond that of a spectator. He and Aunt Doris would visit from York several times throughout the year, staying with my grandmother. This was particularly good news for me, as I knew I'd receive an invitation to take tea with them. Don't get me wrong, my mother was a good cook, but when it came to baking, it was plain stuff, rock buns, jam tarts, you know, the sort of thing. But Aunt Doris was in a class of her own. Vanilla slices filled with apricot jam and cream, chocolate eclairs that melt in the mouth, and my particular favourite, homemade brandy snaps with piped cream at either end, topped off with two juicy strawberries. Each delicacy presented on a pretty china plate with a paper doily. Grandmother's best china is put to good use, and snowy white napkins complete the look. The invitation to take tea duly arrives, and I'm keen to show Aunt Doris that I take the matter seriously and feel it only proper that I dress appropriately for the occasion. I ask, "Should I wear my eating dress, one I usually wore for special occasions, or my bridesmaid dress, that I wore for Cousin Muriel's wedding?" "I think the bridesmaid's dress is a bit over the top, all those bows, French knots, and the big train on the back. Save it for when you get an invite to Buckingham Palace." Mother has spoken, and in a way, I agree. as my red eating dress doesn't have a waistband, and that means more room for cake. Yippee! It's not far for Mother and I to walk to Grandmother's, and as soon as we set off, the conversation turns to a discussion over Aunt Doris's past triumphs. That sherry trifle, best I've ever tasted, the addition of toasted almonds on top, pure genius. Mother's pace quickens. For me, it was those miniature cream horns, especially when Auntie said I could take home the leftovers. We arrive at Grandmother's, knock on the front door, and enter. The smell of fresh baking fills the little house. The square table that dominates the tiny back room is draped with an embroidered tablecloth and groans under the weight of cake stands and tea time paraphernalia. We marvel at the spread, and Uncle Doris launches into her account of her latest City and Guilds exam and how she managed to save the day even after she dropped her mushrooms on the floor. I was just wondering if tea time was like this every day with Uncle and Auntie, and whether to suggest I should move in with them, as Mother and Father have far too many kids anyway, when Nobby bursts into the room. He makes no acknowledgement to the assembled company, but fixes his gaze on the Ferguson 14-inch television in the corner of the room. He walks straight over to the set and turns it on. It warms up after a short while, and some grainy figures emerge. Auntie Doris continues her exam experience. I kept my cool and knew if I washed the mushrooms...
Shush! He's just coming into bowl. We're not interested in your mushrooms, button or otherwise.
The room falls silent. Auntie Pat, also a guest, ventures to speak. Some tea, Joan? My mother nods, not daring to speak, and Auntie Pat rises to pour the beverage.
Just a bit more to the right, insists Nobby.
You mean just here?
Says Auntie Pat, shuffling along the little room, already overloaded with tea, cake stands, and five people.
Yes. Spot on, Pat. Now your big fat ass has completely covered the screen,
Nobby announces indignantly. Aunt Doris blows out her tea, all down her front, splattering her ample bosom, whilst Mother and I try in vain to suppress our laughter. Auntie Pat is indignant.
I'm not staying here to be insulted, you rude, ignorant oaf.
What's an oaf?
I inquire, but the grown-ups ignore me, staring in the direction of Nobby and waiting for a reaction. But there isn't one. His eyes glued firmly on the fuzzy cricket action on the television. With that, Auntie Pat picks up her coat and storms out. Clutching our dainty china plates, we adjourn to the little front room to continue our tea, by which time everyone has lost their appetite. Apart from me, of course, but even I can only manage so many chocolate eclairs. Conversation dries up, and the tea party is brought to a premature end. Dear Auntie Doris loads up a basket of goodies, and as we set off for home, we can hear the slow melodic commentary from the television interspersed with Uncle Nobby's loud snoring. His manners don't improve with age, and some years later he manages to disgrace himself once again. One hot Saturday in August, almost half a century ago, my sister Valerie ties the knot at yet another family wedding. A marquee has been erected on the lawn of our family home, and the afternoon is hot and humid, with an overwhelming combination of fragrant carnations and canvas sheeting. Guests scatter outdoors for a breath of fresh air, but it is virtually non-existent. Myself and my two remaining unmarried sisters, Jackie and Susie, seek refuge under the shade of the old apple tree. I sit on the swing that I have decorated for the occasion, with tendrils of ivy and white convolvulus winding their way around the chains, where the overall effect is quite stunning, even though I do say it myself. In full view of us is Uncle Nobby. Trussed up in a black morning suit, his ample frame filling a canvas chair. A spindly lady, who must be way beyond retirement age, and decked out in a black dress with a white frilly apron, is accosted by Uncle Nobby as she teeters by, balancing a mock silver salver crammed with schooners of cream sherry. He replaces his empty glass with a full one. Susie says what we're all thinking. Nobby's on form, knocking back the sherry in the full sun. It'll all end in tears. Auntie Doris sits next to him in full flight. She's buttonholed the vicar and in her finest Rolls-Royce of voices is extolling the virtues of York Minster and her involvement with the York Mystery Plays. Cousin Nettie strides into view. More at home with her horse, Calypso, it seems quite unusual to see her in a dress for once. She's a sturdy girl, all that mucking out, I suppose, and her dress of navy blue fabric is covered in red daisies, with the ensemble finished off by a big red floppy hat, which is not at all becoming. She plods towards us all very purposefully.
You know what they say, Nettie. Red hat, no drawers.
Nobby hollers out at the top of his voice for all to hear. He laughs, fit to burst, and suddenly the canvas chair topples backwards. He's stuck solid, his legs writhing about in midair, and with that lets out an enormous fart. He resembles a black shiny beetle that has been evicted from an upturned stone. The vicar moves on discreetly, his vestments wafting into the small group of guests, also keen to distance themselves from the debacle. Naturally, us girls think it is hilarious and by far the highlight of the day. The years roll by and the visits become less frequent. One perfect day in the month of June, Aunt Doris serves lunch for her and Nobby in their York home. Gammon, broad beans, and little new potatoes that she'd lifted earlier that morning from the garden, and a china sauce boat filled with homemade parsley sauce, not too thick and not too thin. Nobby thinks the dessert, a fruit crumble, a bit claggy.
It sticks to the roof of my mouth, he says.
Aunt Doris clears the table and goes to make a pot of tea while Nobby adjourns to listen to his beloved cricket on the radio. Aunt Doris returns a little later with a tea tray, having both milk and cream jugs, sugar tongs, and a little bonbon dish of homemade peppermint creams. The soporific tones of the legendary John Arlott fill the room as he commentates on a Yorkshire player's batting average. And a curtain that is half drawn in order to protect the watercolour of York Minster from fading provides a golden filtered glow. The beam of light rests on Uncle Nobby. He's gone. Dear Uncle Nobby, often caught out and a real sport, he enjoyed a very good innings. The end.
Uncle Nobby by Chrissy Payne was performed by Juanita McMahon, with sound design by Adam P. McCready, supported using public funding from Arts Council England. It's produced by New Perspectives Theatre Company's Open Pitch, a unique community programme that showcases extraordinary stories from across the East Midlands.